Hello, humans. You are here for The Vine Down, the show where we chat about all of the wild and wacky topics of enrollment. I'm Emily Smith. I am joined by my illustrious guest, Carlos Cano of Stevens Institute of Technology. He's the undergraduate director of undergraduate admission. Carlos, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Emily. Such a pleasure to be here with you today.
And Carlos just told me, like sprung this on me, that Carlos, you are yourself a podcast host. Please tell our audience about your other life as a podcast host.
I would love to. So I am a huge soccer fan. I am a huge fan of the New York Red Bulls. So I'm obviously in New Jersey in this the tri-state area here on the East Coast. And the New York Red Bulls are our local MLS team. And I'm one of the moderators in our discussion group on Facebook. And we have a weekly podcast. It's the New York Red Bulls discussion group, the podcast. We record every week after games over the weekend. And that is my, you know, that's my hobby, something that I enjoy. I love the game and I love my Red Bulls. And so I get to talk shop about them every week. And it's always a great time.
That's very cool. And I really admire you for having like a hobby. I think in the pre-show, I just like admitted to you that I was like literally lying in bed last night thinking about like how AI recruitment could interact with students in different languages. And like, that's what kept me up all night. And I didn't feel particularly cool. So maybe I need to start following your podcast so that I could have like a cooler hobby than no hobby and just think about enrollment all the time. So I admire your coolness.
Well, I appreciate that. Listen, my Red Bulls sometimes keep me up at night. Particularly when they don't do well. So I can level with that for sure.
I get it. I've never loved a sports team that much, but I appreciate those who do. And yeah, I just think it's really cool. And you've been on a couple of enrollment podcasts lately. I know I caught you on Gil's show a couple of weeks ago. So you're like a loud voice in the space right now. So we're lucky to have you, big star.
I suppose so, but I appreciate it. I love the work and I love this field and love being able to talk to folks like you, Emily, and talk to an audience. And, you know, hopefully someone can take something good away from what I've got to say.
Definitely. That's definitely going to happen. Well, folks, thanks for joining The Vine Down. You are here because you either maybe don't know about College Vine and you know about Carlos. If you don't know about College Vine, we are an enormous professional recruiting network for students, where students join and create these beautiful professional profiles in order to get recruited by colleges. Colleges send connection requests to students. The students either say, yes, I want to be in relationship with you, or no, thank you. And once a connection is formed, it rolls into your CRM on the college side. It's a super deep inquiry where AI takes over to recruit that student with exactly what that student needs along the way and along the journey. And it's just been really exciting to see some of those new features. We have all types of students on the platform. And Carlos, you and I are going to talk a little bit about your area of particular expertise beyond enrollment in general and beyond soccer. I should get some kind of buzzer if you like have some kind of like soccer enrollment analogy. I'll get like some confetti action or like something, because that would be pretty cool. So Carlos, before we get started talking about Hispanic and Latinx student recruitment, I would love for you to share with the audience. We start always this way with guests. What are three key lessons you've learned in your career?
Three key lessons. Number one, the work will be there tomorrow.
Oh, so you don't have to lie in bed and think about it? Oh, okay. I got it wrong.
I have learned that over the course of my career, and particularly now with I have two kids, so a 14-year-old and a 5-month-old, and I have learned very quickly that the work will be there tomorrow. So that's number one.
Love that.
Number two, I would say, is the importance of actively listening to our students, to our families, to our peers and colleagues, actively listening. And I think the more recent one for me anyway, especially going into a position of leadership, has been the idea, the concept of being data informed versus being data driven. So I lean more towards the data informed part. But understanding that there are times and places where it is necessary to be data driven, but data informed for the most part, at least from my perspective.
Okay, help me read or like go slower on being data informed versus data driven, because I could guess what you would say is the difference, but I want to make sure I wouldn't want to put words in your mouth. Tell me the difference between in your mind of being data informed versus data driven.
For sure. For me, data informed means that you take the qualitative piece and the quantitative piece together in order to make decisions, right? The data driven part means that you're, to me anyway, again, means that you're solely using the data to make decisions. And it's
cold, soulless.
I know that so many of my peers out there are really numbers data people. And I always think of a former boss of mine, someone I consider a mentor, who was so into the data and into the numbers and really taught me how important it is, but that it's also important to have the stories and the anecdotes to back up your data. And so again, data informed versus data driven.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that all the time. And I think about, we did a show, a Branch Out, which is like a spinoff of the Vine Down. And Rashad Smith, who's the executive director at University of Southern Indiana, and this was just a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about the word DUT, which is a portmanteau of data and gut, and how important it is to like do those things together, which is a lot of what it seems like you're talking about. So you've got Appel and Rashad. If you don't know him, I would love to like introduce you. Yeah, it's a good word, DUT. Okay, so Carlos, you yourself are a first generation college student, and it sounds like you tote that story out when you're meeting with students in a way that feels really effective in building relationships. Will you share that with us?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I am first generation. My parents emigrated from, my mom's from Cuba. My dad is from Ecuador, and they came over to the States in their mid-teens. So eighth grade, ninth grade.
It's like a painful time to do anything big. So kudos to your parents for doing that at that age.
Wow. 1,000%. Kudos to them. And both of my parents started college, but never finished, but still made their way through the workforce and were always able. My brother and I have a younger brother, were very fortunate to grow up in a household where my parents worked hard, but they always instilled in us the power of education. My mom would, not in a guilty way, would remind me often, I'm doing these things for you now so that you don't have to struggle later on. And so my parents definitely made their sacrifices and whatnot so that my brother and I could do great things. So I went to William Patterson University in New Jersey. So I'm a product of public education, originally from Jersey City. Then went on to public school. My graduate degree in higher ed is from Willie P as well. And it is the story that I use to relate to the students, a good majority of them that I speak to as I recruit. I went through the process. I had a counselor who was pretty supportive, but I was going through the process at a time where I was still mailing things out, if people even remember that. But it was, again, it was, Carlos, what schools are you applying to? And I also went to a public high school where the expectation was that everyone went to a four-year institution. Mm. So it was about, I think, 97-98% of the graduating class went to a four-year institution specifically. And it was, what's your list? Okay, great. Bring in your self-stamped envelopes so we can send your transcripts out and you're done. So I say that mostly to say that one of the reasons why I went into college admissions after I finished my undergrad was because I felt like it was an opportunity for me to pay it forward to others who may have had a similar experience or maybe just don't have that guidance. And so with that, I have made my way to, today where I'm in a position of leadership within an admissions office and continue to leverage my experience and that story to be able to empower others who may be navigating that same space, being a first generation student, in these times, which are certainly quite different from the times that I went through it. But there's still a lot of parallels and a lot of overlap.
So in a way, you've like taken that, like the thinking from your mom, which is like, I'm working so hard so that you can have like this awesome life. You have like rolled that out to all the students that and families that you work with. Now you're like the father of enrollment. Serious question. Have you toted out that language with your kid yet? Your teenager? Like, have you heard those words come out of yourself, out of your mouth? And you're like, oh, there's my mom. She's just talking about my sacrifice for your benefit. I want to know what happens.
That's a great question. And I do, but not that same conversation.
Right? How's it evolved?
It's evolved because the message from my parents when I was growing up was go to school, get your education, because your education will ultimately get you to whatever it is that you want to do. And they were right. They were 100% right. But knowing what I know now in this particular space and time, I have to recognize that it is not always necessary for a student to pursue post-secondary education when they graduate.
Yes, yes.
It's and like
not
so
it's not the right fit for everybody.
Right. It's not the right fit for everyone. And there was a time early in my career where I felt differently. And I firmly believe that because I was an example of it, I was a product of it, that it had to be so for everybody else.
Like you were narrow in your thinking. You were like prescriptive absolutely. And narrow. Like it has to be true that everyone should be headed towards this because this was right for me.
100%. And it so isn't. And so now the conversations that I have with my daughter are, I just want to support you 110% with whatever it is that you want to do. If you want to go to college, great. If you want to go to a 4-year, if you want to go to a 2-year, if you want to do a trade, if you want to do something different, but I just want to support you once you get to that point in time where you need to think about what's next. I'm here to support you no matter what. I mostly have the conversation with her about, just because I'm a director of admissions at a university doesn't mean that you have to do the same thing. And so that's the message, right? I think that's the parallel. My parents supported me, right? And so that's what I want to do now as a parent. But understanding that support is different. The message of support is different.
Yeah. Well, and that's like the sort of some new, you know, it's like new parenting mindset too. Okay. Last line of sort of personal questions about this story. How do you balance, like, cause you're a person who's like sort of like a wholehearted person. And I'm curious about how you balance, like if you're working with a student in your professional capacity, you're like Stevens Carlos, you're not like dad Carlos. And you're working with a student who's like clearly not meant either for your institution or for a 4-year institution. How do you balance the needs of the institution with the needs of the individual student and family if it's not the right fit? Because your mandate is to enroll students. Like, what are you going to do?
That's a great way to pose it. My mandate is to enroll students that are going to stay and they're going to thrive, right? And so that's such a big piece of it. If you're not a fit for X institution, a 4-year institution, it doesn't benefit me. It doesn't benefit the institution to enroll you just because I can, knowing that the following year, you may not be back.
You're creating a retention problem. Yeah.
Right. You may not even make it through a first semester, dare I say a whole year. Mm-hmm. Right. And So I have to think about that. I have to wear multiple hats at the same time when I'm having those conversations.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, and that was like, you like passed the good human test, right? And that like, I don't know many people in enrollment who are like bad humans, right? Like we're literally in this line of work to be helpers. So yes, that makes a lot of sense that you would like want to be a person who was a good steward of like the student and balance the needs of the institution. Okay. Thank you for going on that like thought experiment journey with me. Okay. So Carlos, as a leader, you have done a lot of training for your staff on how to interact with and recruit Latinx and Hispanic students. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you offer in training for your staff? I feel like this is a big, scary area for many of our listeners, and I think some of your expertise would be really useful for them.
It is. And the biggest piece, and this is really a I think general across the board, but particularly with our students and families that identify as Latinx, that many of them we know identify also as first gen. So there's that overlap as well. For many of these students, there's also potentially going to be some kind of a language barrier, whether it's the language barrier that maybe the student has because they may be new to the country, and so therefore English is not the first language. But more often than not, the language barrier is also just between the parents, the family nucleus, and the student, and then you as the admissions person, right? So there's kind of three levels of separation there. And so what I have found to be one of the most critical things to teach staff is, number one, the empathy piece, right? Is to be able to take that moment to understand kind of that dynamic that's maybe occurring in front of you at a college fair or at a visit or when they come visit you on your campuses. But to have that be sort of your foundation, right, for what the conversation will be. But also understanding that many folks, particularly on the parent family side, come at this from very different lenses, from very different perspectives. Because folks, there are many folks who immigrate to the United States either with no concept of higher education because they themselves were not the beneficiaries of, dare I say, sometimes they don't even make it through high school. They're much less college. For others, they have gone through the experience of post-secondary education, but the process in those native countries is so different from the U.S. system that they're not familiar with how to navigate this process. And so it's important to meet that student and that family where they are and to understand the dynamic of what is happening, right? So it's not only the student that has not gone through this process. It is also the parent, the parents, the family that have not gone through that process either. And so coming back to one of the things that I've learned in my career is another thing that I echo to our staff all the time is to actively listen, to get that, to develop that connection and that bond with the student where you understand where they're coming from, where the parent is coming from or parents are coming from, and then to be able to base the rest of the conversation off of that.
Well, you're saying like it's worth making an investment in curious and empathetic assessment of the context in order to make good decisions about how you're going to treat that student or that family, how you're going to show up for them, what they might need. And you're saying like if you make a miss from the beginning, the whole thing is screwed. But if you take the time to have that curious and empathetic context, like assessment of context, then you will be empowered to do the right thing later. So I think like I'm really hearing you say like it's worth that investment of time to understand that at first and make sure that you sort of like pass the gate to get that right before you move on to be like, oh, cool, I want to talk to you about sports. And you're like totally like whiffed on the like what's happening between the student and the parents that like you're talking in English and the student is understanding you, but the family is not like any of those things or like that they might need more general education on like what the American college system is like. And that's what you should show up with.
100%.
Getting that right?
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I was like interested in unpacking that. So I'm curious, like when you talk to your staff about sort of like beyond that training and like you're sort of, that's a tough thing to train on, which is essentially like eyes up because you're going to get a whole bunch of context. Assuming they're reading the context correctly and they get like that initial assessment done correctly, like what types of things are you then asking your staff to look for, engage with, and how with these families?
It's those points of identifying fit for the student. And again, I think this is something that we do generally speaking, but we have to unpack it just a little bit more with prospective students that identify as Latinx, just because of, again, some of those X factors and those layers of the onion, if you will, that exist within the confines of that potential conversation and the dynamic that you may be dealing with whoever's in front of you. And so that is one concept to keep in mind. Another one is to look out for some of those hot button items that, that parents in specific are always, very concerned about. And cost is probably at the top of that list, right? How am I going to afford this? For many, the concept of financial aid is either non-existent or financial aid just means debt and means loans.
Yeah.
And so it's so important to be able to unpack what financial aid is for these folks and be able to let them know that there is a way to make it to that promised land, right, for their student. And that, again, and because so many of them don't understand the concept of higher education and how it really works in the United States, you just have to take it a level deeper than you may with someone who, again, doesn't identify as Latinx, doesn't identify as a person of color or first gen, to be able to really unpack what everything means in the course of the process.
So to observe something that I'm hearing you do, like, naturally, that I think is actually really pro move, is that you're talking about not ramming the benefits of the institution down a family's throat when they're not ready for it, and being open to educate on different topics that's, like, really in line with, like, meeting the student and family with where they are. And taking that time, I think particularly young admissions counselors feel like there's a negative trade-off. Like, okay, if I'm educating about the college process and otherwise closing the guidance gap, I am losing an opportunity to talk about my institution and what makes my institution awesome. Like, if you meet that student who's not ready to hear about that, you break that student's trust. You just sort of show up as misattuned, which really ruins the relationship. And I, like, you are seasoned, you are a pro in your career, and I just want to observe to the audience, like, I understand why you're doing this, and it sounds intentional that you'd be meeting the student where they are at the cost of not, like, ramming things that are awesome about Stevens down this family's throat in order to establish yourself as a trusted advisor, which will show up as a student who is more successful, trusts you and the institution more, will consider you more favorably, will have higher affinity, and likely apply and enroll at higher rates. So, like, you're doing that in service of the student. It's going to play out well in conversion later, but I just want to call out that observation because I think that's a really pro move. And, like,
100%.
You shouldn't feel like you're like robbing talking about the institution.
Yeah. I'll tell a quick story to that effect, Emily, if I can. Some of the best success stories that I've had with that, right, is I think what sometimes we lose sight of is that in the moment that you're having an interaction with a prospective student and or their family, you are the face of your institution. You are the best thing that your institution is currently providing to them that is not in your brochure or in your table display. And I say that because some of the best success stories and some of the biggest moments of fulfillment in my career have been from students who have come to graduate from a four-year institution, but they did so by way of the transfer process, by means of going to the community college. And they have told me that they remember having the conversation with me and mom and dad. And again, and these are Latinx first-generation students who, again, for me, just brings the level of pride to a different level because I identify as Latinx and as first gen and being able to see these students thrive. But when they've told me, Carlos, one of the best things that you told me at a college fair when I was a senior was that I should consider community college and then transfer to a four-year institution. and then graduate. Because at the end of the day, my degree, my bachelor's degree, still has the name of the four-year institution. It doesn't have an asterisk or anything that says that I went to community college or that I transferred or that I did this, that, and third. And all why? Because I took the time to understand that particular student's situation and where they were, the family dynamic, and what that all culminates into, to be able to say, you know what, there's another path for you. Let's help you navigate it that way. Because at the end of the day, you're still going to come to my institution. It may, it just isn't now. It may be a year or two from now. But because I took that time, you'll now come back to me and have that conversation again. And I'll be there to help you navigate through.
Yeah. Audience in the background, our producer, Andrew, who's on private chat with us, is like sending us messages about how enthusiastic he is about this, because this is something he did in his journey. Went to a community college and transferred. And Carlos, this is like proof that you are authentically making recommendations that are durable and sturdy for the student and for the institution. Like, it's not a trade-off if you're saying like, okay, what's really right for you is to go to community college and then go to this institution. That student's going to trust you and show up later. And again, like actually convert, that's going to be a more favorable, that's going to be a favorable enrollment for you later, but like you've done right by the relationship because you're a good, authentic human. And I love that. That's such a good and heartwarming story, but like, I think it allows particularly admissions counselors who are younger in their career to feel freed up to like do the right thing, right? Like that human feeling of like, okay, I really want to advise the student in this way. Like, great, do it. Carlos, the last thing I want you to chat about is sort of like the demographics of this, or like recruiting Latinx students, RE, the demographic cliff. Because when we talk about demographic cliff, that's like a lot of things around population. But this is a population worth getting good at making relationships with. Can you talk about that from like a demographic cliff perspective?
Absolutely. So what we know, what the data has shown us, is that while we are about to embark on this demographic, the demographic cliff with regards to the number of high school students that are out in the market for institutions to recruit, while that will take that dive, we know that the Latinx population is still on the rise when it comes to high school graduation mm-hmm. and those rates. And so there is still an opportunity there for institutions to be able to recruit Latinx students, again, I think in a positive way, and be able to help guide and navigate them through this process. And I think that can be said of course, all the populations, right? Whether you identify as Black, Brown, Asian, whatever the case may be, but there is an opportunity there specifically with the Latinx population, where those students will be there and they are interested in post-secondary education. And I say that, I should take a step back and not just say post-secondary education, but a post-secondary experience, right? Because again, I cannot emphasize enough and acknowledge that for all of our students, including Latinx students, the next most logical step for them may not be post-secondary education. It may be something else. And so we have to be willing to have that conversation with them, and ultimately support them and help them navigate, point them in the right direction to be able to get to what that next step is. So again, when we talk about specifically the Latinx population, there's going to be opportunity there to continue to recruit those students at a higher rate.
That's just right. And if you are curious on the college side, if you're hearing this and going like, well, I don't know how to get to these students, where they are, who they are, we have a free tool for that. Audience, a couple weeks ago, I did a show about like a roundup of all the free tools. If you go to cv.watch/tools, you'll be able to find our Student Environment Explorer, which will allow you to see for your institution the opportunity of Hispanic and Black students, but we're talking about Hispanic students today, but for you to explore where geographically those students are and how you might go recruit them. But that's an opportunity to check out at cv.watch/tools on that free tool. Thank you, Carlos. And Carlos, as we end every time, because we're now in like this rolling hell of continued May 1 Groundhog Day over and over and over until we get deposited students. Everything's fine. I'm curious if you will lighten the gloom a little bit and tell us what you are excited about in the next 6 months.
I am excited about Red Bull Soccer. Number one, we're off to a great start. We're off to a great start this season, and I am extremely optimistic about how they will do. So that's kind of the more sidebar note for me in terms of what I'm excited about. But truly, I am most excited about knowing that in 6 months, I'll have a soon-to-be one-year-old at home. I'll have an oldest daughter who will have started her sophomore year of high school, which is absolutely insane for me to think about. But it is real, and it is happening. And to me, you know, right now my family is just my focus, my drive, my core. And so anything and everything else is icing on the cake. I know that if I have with that and having that, everything else, again, icing on the cake.
I love to hear it. Thank you for sharing that. Well, humans, we'll wrap it up for the Vine Down today. We'll see you next week. Thank you, Carlos, so much for being on the show. Everyone, drink water. Take a little rest. You deserve it. Take good care, everybody.
Bye, everybody.